This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:06 with Kelvin and Hezril, and first up on Pope Pope, we're talking about climate change and preparing for the worst. So Singapore, being Singapore, is planning ahead for the worst case scenario when it comes to climate change. The government has a 100 billion Singapore dollar plan to prepare the Lion City against rising temperatures and sea levels.
That's right. So while the rest of the world prepares for sea levels to rise by half a meter, in the near term, Singapore is getting ready for water levels to go up by 4 meters. Overreaction, you say? Well, maybe not. I mean, for a country of its size, Singapore's carbon footprint is pretty big. So while it's got less than 0.01% of the world's land mass, it actually contributes to around 0.1% of global emissions. So that's quite big.
Yeah, and I think this is, part of the conversation that we had quite recently, which is about how Singapore has plans to phase out vehicles with internal combustion engines by 2040. So they're really looking to move towards this greener direction, right? Because, I think even then, during the budget announcement, they've said that, well, climate change is actually an existential threat to our existence. It's not something that, maybe we'll lose a few meters off the ground, or, well, we'll just get a bit wet now and then. No, that's not the case. Yeah. They're really feeling it, I think. And this is really, I think, a larger conversation, right? Because island nations all around the world are facing this problem because they are exceptionally vulnerable to climate change. Yeah. Even back in 2015, a previous president of Kiribati had said, our islands, our homes may no longer be habitable or even exist within this century. And I think for the likes of countries like Singapore, Marshall Islands, the Maldives, they're all really feeling it because, they're at risk of sinking.
Yeah, and here at home, Penang is an island. And in 2018, former Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng said that, he approved 150 million ringgit for the next phase of Penang's flood mitigation projects. And even then, some people are saying, is that enough? And should we look even more long-term and take more, more bigger measures to face climate change?
Yeah, you can, of course, let us know what you think about this story. Specifically, what would you like to see invested in Malaysia in terms of climate change, and how do you think we can get much more ready to face its consequences? Is there anything preventive we can actually do right now? You can call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to now cross over to Dr. Alisan Mahadi, Senior Fellow at ISIS Malaysia. Alisan, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What are your thoughts on Singapore's plan, essentially?
Well, first of all, we have to put it into context. It's quite sensational, of course, 100 billion Singapore dollars, but it's actually over a century, so over 100 years. So that's about, if you want to break it down, about a billion a year. So that's still a significant amount of money, of course. But in terms of Singapore, what we have to understand is Singapore is a low-lying island state, and therefore the issue of climate change because of sea level rises is really an existential issue. So in that sense, the rhetoric coming from Singapore is this is really an existential fight. So I think whatever the cost really is, we can understand it in that context.
What kind of specific measures would preparing for climate change include in the case of Singapore?
Well, when you talk about climate change generally, the jargon is you often break it down to mitigation and adaptation measures. Mitigation is, of course, to reduce carbon emissions through reducing the usage of fossil fuels. And there's many ongoing activities such as transitioning to renewable energy, greening the transport systems and so on. But as I mentioned, the key thing here is in terms of climate change adaptation and in terms of Singapore is really to do with addressing the sea level rise. So this will include construction of seawalls, stone embankments, and a lot of engineering solutions. Also, there's also a lot of talk about nature-based solutions, for example, planting mangroves, which are natural sea defense wall. So a lot of the funding, and I've read one report saying about 72 billion of that funding will go to building defenses against rising sea levels.
I guess then, based on what you suggested, you know, building seawalls, having more mangrove forests, for example, is there a risk with some of these measures that it might actually be just short-term, and in the long-term, inadvertently, it might actually damage the ecosystem just a bit more and causes a further long-term risk instead?
Well, it's a huge challenge. One of the biggest challenges of climate change is it's very uncertain in nature. So we do not exactly understand and know, and we cannot predict accurately, for example, what is the level of sea rise that will actually increase. Is it 1 millimeter per year? Is it 6 millimeters per year? So it's very uncertain based on a lot of complex factors. So there is that risk that these huge engineering projects can cause, especially impacts to the marine ecosystem and so on. But again, I think at least from Singapore's perspective, they look at it from an existential point of view. So this is really point of survival, really.
Mm. So what other countries or cities might see a similar level of need in terms of preparing for climate change? Now, you know, we know that Singapore is preparing for the worst. Should other countries also prepare for the worst? Prepare for the worst?
Well, Singapore is considered a low-lying island state, and if you want to kind of cluster it around there, of course, you've got the Pacific Islands that are also low-lying states. Maldives have always been, you know, there was so good, been sensationalized as Maldives will disappear because of climate change and so on. And Maldives have spent a lot of finances on infrastructure to, once again, to build all the sea defense walls and so on. But there are some countries that just couldn't afford it. For example, Kiribati, a small island state, and they have resorted to actually buying land in Fiji for, in the case that they will need to migrate some of the inhabitants there. So in that sense, Singapore is quite lucky because Singapore can afford these measures, and in that sense, perhaps it's more closely, you can closely compare it more to countries such as Netherlands, who, you know, large parts of Netherlands is actually below the sea level. So they have been dealing with this issue for a long time. And therefore, you know, Netherlands shows that it is possible. It is possible to continue to survive in the face of this sea level rises.
Right. And I guess with this plan, one of the concerns by the Singaporean government is how the cost of preparing for climate change can be shared in a fair manner across generations. What are the considerations here?
Well, when you mention across generations, it's really an ethical question, right? I mean, what are our responsibilities to future generations? Do we, does this generation foot the bill for the livelihoods of the future generations? It's a bit of a, it's a very deep ethical question, because the problem with future generations is there's no reciprocity, right? Whatever the future generations do, perhaps we won't feel, we won't get any benefits from them. So it's a very ethical question, but in that sense, in terms of financing, one of the ways to get around that is Singapore is simply just borrowing the money rather than dipping into the reserves, and therefore, the future generations will also have to foot the bill rather than only the current generation footing the bill for these big projects.
Yeah, on that note about sharing, can these funds be shared across other countries who have less resources, like Kiribati?
Yes, and that's the those are the tough negotiations actually at the global level. Of course, the Paris Agreement sets the scene for that, but it has always been a case of the obligation of developed nations against and trying to fund the developing countries, because again, we talk about Kiribati, we talk about Maldives. These are not the countries that have been emitting the carbon emissions. In fact, the carbon emissions are negligible across the world, but they are the ones that are most vulnerable to the effects. So those talks are ongoing. The mechanisms for financing is still ongoing, but definitely there is a responsibility of the richer nations to to adapt, to pay for the adaptation measures for developing countries.
And let's look at Malaysia's case. Do we have similar plans for our island states?
For our island states, it's unclear. There hasn't been much that has come to my notice in terms of island states. In fact, in terms of coastal erosion, in terms of our coastal management, a lot of the work that we are doing now, from my understanding, is more really about understanding the vulnerability of these areas. I don't think we have a full picture yet, which areas are the most vulnerable, which areas are the most, that we can suffer most from coastal erosion and so on. So before we even implement some measures, we need to firstly understand, in terms of climate change especially, as again, I do appreciate it's very complex, but we really need to understand and have maps of the most vulnerable coastal areas within the country.
So you say before we take any measures, we need to understand the bigger picture here. So how long do you think that would take, or that would need to take, for us to then, you know, get into implementing the measures as soon as possible?
Well, to be fair, we have begun those activities already, so it shouldn't take too long. We just have to really intensify those efforts. I mean, we have a coastal vulnerability index, we have an integrated shoreline management plan, and so on. But we really need it to be just more make sure that they are accurate, they are up to date, and so on. I think. At the moment, it's not 100% sure, I think, about what is the current situation. So it shouldn't take long. I mean, I think if there are significant efforts, I think within the year or something, we can do that. But as you can see, from especially if we go to, as you mentioned, these large projects, I think we have to be sure that these are based on needs, based on vulnerabilities and risk assessments, rather than based on simply, based simply on the vested interests of some people or so on.
And also just locally, if we consider how Singapore's government, I guess, has sort of painted the picture of climate change, that it is indeed an existential threat to them, do you think conversations are around the same level of worry in Malaysia?
Definitely not. And to be fair, Malaysia is less vulnerable comparatively with Singapore. I think Singapore, again, being that low island, low-level island state, and just being an island in itself, does feel that, does have that psyche, perhaps, of being more vulnerable. In Malaysia, we are not one of the most vulnerable countries in relation with climate change, but that does not mean that we have not felt the impacts. For example, of course, the flood events even last year and 2014, I think, have resulted in tremendous amount of damage and people evacuated and so on. So I think it has not reached that level in Malaysia. But I think that conversation we should have that conversation seriously.
Yeah, and when we do have these conversations, is the next step then just trying to go beyond cutting emissions? You know, balancing act in terms of where to put the resources into reducing carbon emissions and dealing with its after effects.
Yes, that's the big debate across the world, in fact. But again, in the context of Malaysia, our mitigation, our carbon emissions in the world is also negligible. So it's beyond our control. So we really need to speak about adaptation. We really need to mobilize finances to adapt to a changing climate. The recent IPCC report has demonstrated that even if we manage to reduce to reduce the carbon emissions to 2 degrees Celsius, we will still feel the impacts of climate change. And currently, we are on track to about 3 degrees Celsius. So, I think it's a reality. We have to both adapt and mitigate to climate change.
Alizan, thank you so much for weighing in today.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Alizan Mahadi, a senior fellow at ISIS Malaysia, speaking to us about Singapore's $100 billion plan to survive climate change in the long term. Now, if you have any thoughts on the kinds of steps Malaysia could be taking, or actually any ideas on any thoughts on how Singapore is reacting to it, you can let us know. 7733 2900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We have this message here from Tan that says, mangroves are significant to the ecosystem. The government should stop all seaside reclamation projects that only benefit the property developer but destroy the ecosystem that caused many generations to suffer. Penang is one of the examples of destroying mangroves for property development.
Yeah, and, you know, just if we just bring it the conversation here to KL, you know, when I'm out in the streets, whether I'm in the city center or a residential neighborhood in PJ, you know, I'm always thinking, it's like, why aren't we planting more trees? Because it really is, you know, it really is hot. And sometimes I wish it's as simple as just having shade and also having, you know, I just love trees and greenery. So it's just nice to take a break from the concrete. And, you know, I asked, in fact, I asked Seksan, who's an architect, a landscape architect.
All right, we spoke about Kebun Bangsar yesterday.
Yes, we talked about Kebun Bangsar yesterday, and I asked him, you know, how much would it cost to plant a tree? And he said, not much. It's a matter of mindset, you know, amongst the civil service. So, yeah.
I think just on that note as well, then perhaps that's not quite taken taken up as a consideration even into buildings, right? Because we've seen a green architecture becoming more of a thing, especially if we have a problem with land as a resource. Mm-hmm. Singapore faces that, so then they're figuring out ways to get around that, you know, making sure that the buildings are green. In countries that perhaps don't have as much of the problem, you know, we see this here. Mm-hmm. We also likely see this in America because they have so much land that they are able to just build really large compounds, and things take maybe between each place in some places just to get from one block to another, it takes quite a significant amount of time. So I think as long as the threat, and unfortunately this seems to be the case, as long as the threat doesn't seem to be ever present, it doesn't seem to be existential, the case that is Singapore's, then perhaps our reactions to it might just be a bit slower. Again, you can let us know your thoughts. You know, what can Malaysia do right now to prepare for, maybe even try to match up with how Singapore is planning for its climate change, trying to tackle climate change. You can call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we have some music. It's Green River by Clear Credence Revival. Credence Clearwater Revive. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.